Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 148 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, I am super excited to have Jose Chavez with us to share his story. He's originally from El Salvador, but he was born and raised in North Carolina, so he considers himself an official Southern boy. He is a brother, son, and accountant by profession. With that being said, to the outside world, he was a professional and normal person. Unfortunately, we are only as sick as our secrets, and his secret was the disease of addiction. He's always had a toxic relationship with food since he was a child, and that was his first addiction. Throughout his life, he has been on multiple diets, suffered through multiple eating disorders, and has had many addictive behaviors. They say one disease, many outlets, and that is him. After he was given the gift of desperation, he finally decided to embark on his road to recovery to live his true, authentic, and unadulterated self. I love this intro. Welcome, Jose. So glad to have you on today to share your story with all of us.
Thank you so much, Siobhan. I'm so happy and privileged to be here.
Well, talk to us then a little bit. Let's just dive right in. Talk to us about, you know, your story here, how it started. You know, you said even as a child. So, you know, kind of take us back and tell us how this all started for you.
All right. So as far as I can go back, I always actually remember having a very toxic relationship with food, and it wasn't the best. As a child, I was very active, so I think it was easier for me to be able, in a sense, to hide how compulsive I was and how, you know, addicted I was to food. I consider myself a food addict. But then it did start to catch up with me, and I remember going on my first diet around the age of 10. And I was overweight. So due to that and due to health concerns, the, you know, physician told me that I needed to go on a diet. And I was raised in a household where we really didn't have restrictions when it came to food. So it was a free-for-all. We did predominantly eat in the household. So there wasn't an excessive amount of processed food, but if we asked for it, we did give it, we would receive it. And I will say it was definitely the love language that we were raised. And I won't speak on my whole culture, but our social functions, our traditions, our events, a lot of it did revolve around food. And since I was known as the eater in the family, a lot of the chefs in my family, they enjoyed me eating these large amounts of food. And that was one thing that for me, I never actually had a problem binging in front of people. I would eat just these large amounts of food. And sometimes with social functions, that's when I actually would go off my quote unquote diet. So around the age of 10, like I said, is when I went on my first diet. And it was very unsuccessful in the sense that I actually became very ill to a point that I was in the hospital, in and out. I was hospitalized many times. Then I also developed even some mental issues. I was even put into an asylum and I was separated from my parents. So I did go through a lot of trauma, to be honest, and it was really hard. And in a sense, it was due to restriction. Like I wanted to restrict, and I will say I wasn't truly successful in it, but I was successful in damaging my body. That is what I was successful in. So then after that, I was actually able to heal physically and mentally. And honestly, after then, I did a lot of self work and I was able to heal. But then I never really confronted the fact that I, you know, was an addict. And then my weight reached the normal state and I was pretty much just, I would say, like, you know, a chronic user, but functioning.
And so then how old are you? Sorry to interrupt, but like, how old are you at this time? You know, if that first diet's at 10 and they're in and out of the hospital and the sala, I mean, that's amazing. Like just to hear that story. And how old then were you once you started kind of, you know, healing yourself?
So that was around my teenage years, okay. Like around my preteen to teenage years. And then I started healing myself. And I will say I did reach a lot of self-love at that point. It wasn't, you know, exactly where I am now, but I did do a lot of internal healing and a lot of physical healing that then I was able to, because one of the things that really caused me to, you know, I was overweight, but what really caused me to become ill was this sort of double identity that I had never really realized. When I went to English speaking school, you know, there wasn't really a lot of overweight kids. So I was very bullied for being overweight. Yet when I would go home, I was never, you know, really honestly criticized for being in a heavier body. And I was almost even encouraged to eat these large amounts of food. And I was known as, he's a growing boy. But you know, when I look at it, that was, and sort of is just part of our family and our culture, that it's not, sometimes we didn't really demonize, you know, being thin. So I say that to say that then there was like that double issue. Like I was like, okay, so am I supposed to behave this way? Am I not supposed to eat this way in public? Because when I would eat this way at home, it's okay. But when I would eat this way in other communities that were predominantly English speaking, it was not okay. I was bullied. I was seen as different. I was seen as a pariah. So then when I reached my teen years and I start healing, it pretty much, when I look back on it, I was just then healing and then just in and out of diet culture because I was really easy to put on weight. But at this point, quote unquote, I was, you could say, like a normal weight person, but I could notice my tendency. So I was always that person, like looking at the next diet, looking to see, you know, what I could do to control my weight. So this then goes on. And then when I finally reached college is when I was introduced to alcohol and to other drugs. And once again, is like it says, like one disease, but many outlets. Because that is then when I started getting addicted to these substances. And when I look back on it, you know, I never wanted to accept the fact I was an addict, but I was what you say, a functioning alcoholic in society, because I was, to the world, I seemed normal. And then when I decided to put down, then that goes on. And then I reached a really traumatic event in my adulthood, which I then had never realized, you know, that I had honestly almost even forgot that as a child, I had technically suffered from eating disorders. You know, like they say, sometimes you try to forget your past. And I think I definitely did that. So then as an adult, I go on and I realize that, you know, like I said, I'm always in and out of diets, but never something too serious. But then a traumatic event happens as an adult. And that really was what eventually led me to my rock bottom. After that, I remember that that's when I really turned to the food for comfort. Food had always been my lover, my friend. Now I see it honestly like as an abusive partner because it was someone that was doing me so much damage. And yet I would always go back to it. And I always remember what I would say, you know, I don't want to eat this way. And I would always fail the next day. So then I remember going through this traumatic event and I would have mental breakdowns. I was very, it was something that impacted our family really hard. And then I remember once, and I still remember that day, to be honest, like I remember I got on the scale and to me, my attic voice said, you need to control this. It was one of the highest numbers I had ever seen before. And that wasn't my highest weight, but I remember that was when like the addict in me said, you need to control this. So then my way by controlling it was, okay, I need to hit another diet. And then once again, like I would hit all the diets and, you know, to be honest, you name all the diets, I did them, like, you know, being vegan, vegetarian, the military diet, the egg diet, you name it, I did it, the injections. So then I then realized that this is where then my eating disorder also came back. I feel like there is a difference between, you know, well, eating disorders and food addiction per se. But then this is where like I started with orthorexia. And for me and my story, my eating disorder definitely morphed because I was obsessed with eating clean. Like I was obsessed. I was tracking calories. I was tracking macros. And then that unfortunately converted into bulimia. And that's another thing that I honestly, in a sense, sort of still remember. One of the first times I would purge through many different ways. So I would purge through laxatives, through vomiting, and through exercise. Like I would be hours and hours at the gym burning the excessive amount of calories I had eaten. And then I would, you know, just the purge and restrict cycle would start and continue and it would go on and on. And then I still remember one of the first times I purged because at one point I wanted to go to medical school. So I studied a lot of medicine and I'm really like fascinated by it and I like it. And I knew the damage I was doing to my body by purging these different ways. Yet I still engaged in it. I still would continue to, you know, this behavior. So then my bulimia then, because I didn't want anyone to know. And, you know, I thought I was self-sufficient. I was like, I can do this on my own. I can combat this on my own. I, in a sense, in which I don't recommend, but I, in a sense, sort of tried to heal myself from bulimia. And in a sense, I did. I stopped the purging, which sometimes I tell people it was one of the hardest things I ever did. Like the recovery was so painful. It was so brutal. It was really hard. I mean, to be honest, at this point, like I'm doing everything on my own. So I will say I stopped the purging and then the binging still left though. So then that's when technically it morphed to binge eating disorder. And the weight just kept coming on and on. So then once again, you know, I went back to my diets, I went back to my books, to the self-help books, and I'm like, okay, is it emotional eating? Is it this? And then once again, just the multiple diets. Then I started going also to weight loss doctors and sometimes the weight loss pills, they would lose the weight and then it would come back. And that was always my story. Like I would lose 50 pounds, then gain 60, lose 70, gain 80. So it would just go back and forth and the weight would always come back. And then with the vengeance, like they say sometimes, it's not hard for sometimes food addicts or, you know, people to go on a diet. The hard thing is staying stopped and being consistent. Because if you told me, you know, do the low carb diet, don't eat any carbs, I would not eat a carb and I would stick to it and I would do it. But then once again, since I was still so obsessed with it, it would come back. So then after that, you know, my health at this point is getting worse and worse. I'm on the road to becoming pre-diabetic. My sleep apnea is worse. The skin conditions are bad. And then basically my physician is like, well, you know, the weight loss pills aren't working and this and that. You've tried everything else. So then basically they were like, we could go a road of weight loss surgery. And then to get that approved in the United States, you have to go through a lot of approvals, a lot of reviews. So then I share this part of my story because of how the addiction can be so insidious, you know, they say, you know, powerful, baffling, and cynical. And it is. I consider myself to be a very reasonable person and to make really great decisions due to my addictive and compulsive behaviors. And especially when it came to food, when it came to substances, I literally feel like I would turn into a different person. And like it says, one in two people cannot live in the same body. And I literally feel like someone else would take over. So then I realized that I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to go through all that. So then I decided to get it done in another country. And then, so I jump on the plane, I go get this weight loss surgery and I go get it done by myself alone. Once again, I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want anyone to find out. I didn't want anyone to know I had suffered from eating disorders. I didn't want anyone to know I was an alcoholic. I didn't want anyone to know I was a food addict. So then I get the surgery, which was another one of the most painful things I had ever done. I remember actually waking up. And the recovery, I mean, for it, I remember just saying, what did I just do to myself? So then I recover from that and the weight also comes off. But then unfortunately, like I now have also heard from other people, and unfortunately I was one, like I ate through the surgery. And that's then when once again, my crazy mind and the crazy addict, and I was like, you know what? I have heard though, cocaine can help you lose weight and that makes you not eat. And for some reason, I believe in a higher power of my choosing, which I call God. Before I reached for the needle, and at this point I had suffered from alcoholism. I had been addicted, you know, to caffeine. Like I remember drinking like just cups and cups of caffeine. So I think at this point, I had not fully accepted I was an addict, but I knew I just had an addictive personality in a sense, but that was like the language I used. So then though, something in me told me before I reached for that needle and go for the cocaine that I needed to treat this like an addiction, because that's the only way, because I couldn't think. In my head, I'm like, I did everything and I still, and at that point I was like, I still failed. I was like, I still am not able to control. And it was an unsatiable appetite that could never be seized, that could never, like when people say like they're full, I could never relate to that. And I knew I had an issue because if I was eating something, I was already thinking about something else. And I was already thinking about what else I could put, you know, down my throat and into my stomach. So then before reaching, like I said, for the needle, I said, I have to treat this like an addiction. And something took me once again to like one of my universities of YouTube, and I typed in food addiction. And that is when I saw Bitten Johnson come up, and she had a video about food addiction, and that, like, it amazed me. It amazed me because I was like, maybe I'm not the only one. And when I saw that video, I then read the book Food Junkies. And that book, like I tell people, that book literally is one of the books that saved my life, because not only in her book did I feel seen, heard, and loved, but thanks to that book, I then was able to go into a fellowship, which I had never heard of. Like the only thing I had ever heard of was Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never even knew how that worked. Like I didn't even, like that's like, I just knew that existed. So to say that, I never knew about these treatment centers. I never knew about all these other support groups. So I often say that I feel that book was the book that saved my life, because I read it, I don't know how many times, and I still sometimes go back to it. And due to that book, I walked into a fellowship, and which I went to many, but then I finally found what I felt was my fellowship, the one that I related to the most and that helped me the most. And that's really when I started my road to recovery, because it was forever this on and off. And like I said, when I reached my rock bottom, I was like, I've tried everything. And even that at one point I had hope, but even like I say, my addict voice, my eating disorder voice, part of it was like, you might fail at this too, and this might not be the answer. And then the other part of me was like, well, I've tried everything else, so I might as well just add this. Cause then I didn't even know what fellowship, I sort of didn't really even know what I was walking into. Cause then part of me was even like, is this maybe another diet club? Is another Weight Watchers, but you guys just don't use the name Weight Watchers. So then part of it too, I never even really knew what necessarily I was walking into. But there was a part of me though that had hope. And I guess as an addict, I will say, I am someone that I'm chronically looking for information. It's something I try to pull back from now. I'm chronically reading, you know, better, much more, you know, shinier, brighter, the more, the better. So that's something that I, you know, still work on, because with that, that's why once I started the fellowship, you know, to me, that was one of the key answers to my road to recovery. And ever since then, it has been a total life changer. And I'm still a work in progress. For me, I will always be a work in progress, supervised by my higher power. But that was when I felt I had true, when I really embarked on the road to recovery, that I realized I was a food addict. I am a food addict. I suffer from addictions. But also, I sometimes tell people that wasn't the hardest part for me, to be honest, because when I look at my family tree, I do come from a family of addicts. So that wasn't that surprising to me. And that wasn't that hard to me. I will say for me, and something I still try my best and I still battle with sometimes, the hardest part for me was reaching out for help and knowing I couldn't do this alone. Even when I realized that, I was like, okay, this is perfect. I was like, okay, I'm a food addict. Like, I know. Now I just need the answer. Now I just needed to solve this on my own. Cause like I had said, I had done everything in a sense on my own, like recovered from bulimia, you know, gone on the diets, and I lost the weight, but then it would come back with a vengeance. So then I was like, how can I do this on my own? And that was the hardest thing for me, was reaching out and finding a community. But I've now realized, to me, that is the answer to recovery. Like they say, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. It truly is connection. And that has made all the difference.
This is such an incredible story, and I'm sure so many people can relate to a lot of different pieces of it. And I just like feel like, thank God for Bitten Johnson. I mean, she's just helped so many people. I love her so much. Just finding that, all right, you're at the point now that you can put Google food addiction and resources come up, you know? So this is what makes me hopeful about the future, is that there's just so many more resources available and help available for people that need it. Because I think like what you said, you know, you did everything, you still fail, you can't control this. Like that's such a common feeling for people, and wanting to really help themselves. You know, you got on a plane to go get weight loss surgery that to me is incredible, without telling anybody. Like these are the lengths that people will go to help themselves. And that's why it's just so important for me, for there to be more help around food addiction in particular, because there's so many people that really want to help themselves and they just don't know how. They're trying. And think about how much money you spent, you know, throughout your, I always think about that too, like how much money have you spent trying to help yourself? And you sound like you were, you know, so committed to really, and you did a lot on your own. I also want to just talk about the orthorexia. I just think it's so interesting for people that don't know what that is. That's like, yeah, like you were talking about, just being completely obsessed with eating clean, counting macros, like being healthy, but being obsessed with being healthy, you know, to a degree where it you can't function normally because you are so obsessed with it. So that's so interesting to see how that moved to the bulimia and then binge eating disorder. Just really, really like fascinating, your whole story. And again, I just think so many people are really, really relating to that. So how long ago was it now that you found kind of this, the fellowship and know, and the realization that really you needed that connection, like that was kind of the missing piece for you?
So it has been about, I'm coming close to like 3 years. And, you know, everyone's, you know, road to recovery to me, yeah, I always tell people it's different. And even that, like, I'll never forget, like when I entered my fellowship and, you know, we worked the steps and then there's a process where you have to sponsor. I remember, I also consider myself a recovering perfectionist because I wanted everything to be perfect. And even in that, that's why I think in a sense, I was able to hide this from my family, from society, in a sense that to them, I appeared like someone normal because I wanted to always be perfect. We were in a sense raised in a household that, you know, you had to look a certain way, act a certain way, behave a certain way. And to me, you know, no one could ever find out Jose suffered from addictions or Jose suffered from eating disorders. So then when I entered my fellowship, you know, they said like, there's one point where you'll then have to sponsor. And I just remember telling myself, oh my gosh, like, what if I'm a bad sponsor? Like, what if, you know, I'm fired or something. And then when I look back on it, and even then I would tell myself, we haven't even done step one yet. And we're already worried about that. But to me, that is also the part of the addict in me, just being obsessive, compulsive, and wanting everything to be linear. Like I wanted my recovery to be linear. So for me personally, I don't even count days. I just know right about when I entered my fellowship. And it was, you know, what made all the difference around like 3 years ago. And like I said, I went to many different fellowships though, until I found the right one that was for me. And, you know, because there's many different flavors out there. And I always tell people, your tribe is out there. You just have to find them. Like, I remember being one part of one group that I sort of enjoyed, but then I did feel like I was on trial sometimes because they honestly emphasized moderation. They were mainly focused on like binge, like recovering from binge eating disorder. So for them, they wanted to incorporate like moderation. And to me, moderation does not work. It just is not part of my story. You know, like in a sense, like alcoholism, like you don't tell an alcoholic to have one drink. So I always felt I was on trial and I left the group. So now I often say like, if you need to leave a group, you were too good for the group to begin with. And you know, maybe that's just not your tribe. Like, you know, a wolf is as strong as its pack and a pack is as strong as its wolves. And I tell people your tribe is out there. And, you know, and some like, so then I am part of my fellowship. And then I came across Sugar X Global when they did their Crush Your Cravings Challenge. And I'm also part of that community, which is another piece that has been pivotal for me in my recovery. Because I really love the education of it, just the education and how the chemicals work in the brain and, you know, just the dopamine and the neurotransmitters. So the education piece has been a really big part of my recovery. And once again, the community, it's a different community and it's the community that I needed as a supplement to my fellowship. But just, I guess, you know, like I said, I had never felt that had been seen or heard. And I honestly just felt that people didn't understand. And then being with, you know, what they say, normal eaters, whatever you deem as a normal eater, you know, they could never relate to me and I could never relate to them. So that's why being part of a community that actually understands you, I think not only helps you like heal, but it also motivates you to be better because they understand you. And then you're able to understand them as well.
Yeah, you speak, like Bitten will say that too. You got to find people that speak the language, you know, like that understand. Yeah, like, of course, I was going to go on a diet, but then I was in the trash can digging out the brownies that I threw out the night before because I was going to be good. Be like, and where a normal eater would be like, ew, what? You know, where other people, you know, that are addicts are like, oh yeah, I've done that. I mean, it's just so freeing because this disease can be so isolating, you know, like you did, so you try to do it on your own and you just feel like, I know I felt like I was the only person in the world that suffered and it was something wrong with me, you know, that I couldn't control this. So I think being able to connect with people is so important. You know, I did it on my first part of my recovery on my own, but now, you know, I've had this podcast community, I do coaching, like I'm so connected now and there's no way that I would still be sober right now if I didn't have all these people, resources to reach out to, you know, because like it is, you know, it's a process. It's always a work. And, you know, like you said, you're a work in progress. It's always going to be like that for all of us. And life still happens. You know, we are still going to have those challenges. So we really need to have that support group around us to help us get through, I think, those times. So I love too that you said, you know, if you join a group and you don't connect, find another group. Like your tribe is out there. And I love that everyone's like, it looks different for everybody. Like you found Fellowship plus Sugar X. Like that's your right fit. And I just love that. Like there are so many more groups out there, programs. Yeah, if you do start one and feel it's not you, it's just not the right fit for you. So yeah, I always say that to people, don't give up, you know, keep finding that one because it will really resonate with you and you'll feel seen, you know, you'll feel loved, you'll feel supported. I feel like that's how it should feel like. It shouldn't feel like you're being shamed or criticized, you know, that's not to me, that's not true freedom. So I'm so happy to hear that you found, you know, this right fit for you. What are some of, you know, for you, even in your journey, what I think is fascinating is that you started a diet at age 10. My kids are like 8 and 7. I can't even imagine them starting a diet, you know, but so age 10 and you started, you know, doing a lot of self-care, even at that age. So talk to us about, it sounds like you've been working on this for a while. What are some of your favorite tools, I guess, to that you turn to, you know, every day that really keeps you going?
So some of my favorite tools are definitely reading some of my daily meditations, and I am definitely a person of affirmations. Yeah. And, you know, they say you are what you believe. And I truly believe that. And, you know, the voices inside our head can be either, you know, the worst voices we hear, or they can be the best cheerleader inside of us. So I'm really big on affirmations. One of my favorite tools is also going to meetings and making those connections with other people that, you know, resonate with me, relate with me, either on the fact that they also suffer from addictions. And just making those connections is one of my, you know, one of the greatest tools I have. And also for me is just prayer and, you know, being also really grounded in gratitude. I used to always think I was a very grateful person, but I realized I really wasn't. I think, you know, there's something called like fake positivity. And now I can really say that I feel like now I truly embrace real positivity, like real positive energy, because I since realized that, you know, those that want to like project real positive energy and they try to say, oh yeah, let's always stay positive. When you really embrace positive energy and a positive spirit, you don't have to say it. Like you feel it and you embrace it. Like sometimes they say, you know, on this message of recovery, like not only do we carry the message, we are the message. So that to me has been like a big difference. And to touch just again on the isolation, for me, with the connection piece has been the best thing. I know for me, my disease, it loves the isolation. It loves the shame. to be honest, on this road, like I said, it hasn't been linear. And I've had many slips, many trips. Some people would call them relapses. I don't consider them relapses. That is the language I do not choose, just because to me, I define a relapse a certain way, just like I define abstinence a certain way. And to say that, though, that removes a lot of the shame. And that's a lot of what my disease loves. It loves the shame. It loves, you know, the isolation. And something that I didn't touch on, but when, you know, like it says in the old, you know, Cherokee tale, like, you know, it's the wolf you feed that wins, you know, one is prideful, angry, resentful, and the other one is happy, grateful, and joyous. And it's the one you feed that will prevail. I was forever feeding the wrong wolf. And when I isolate, when I don't use my tools, you know, that is when my addiction is being fed. And when I really need to reconnect. And throughout my healing and throughout everything, you know, ever since the age of 10, when I was in a very dark place and I reached really dark places, unfortunately, I did have a lot of, you know, mental health issues and a lot of suicidal ideation. And just like how that voice, you know, like we have the, to me, we have those two voices, or I have those two voices. I'll never forget too, there were many times, unfortunately, on that road of healing that, you know, there was a voice that said, just end it all. And it would scream and it would yell. And it was the addiction speaking, the eating disorder speaking. And then I often think of this because what I consider, you know, also my higher self, and what I say, the true Jose, and like sometimes I say sometimes, will the true Jose please stand up? The true Jose would say, and it was a soft voice, and it was so soft, it was so gentle, and it was really, really low. But I'll never forget that that voice said, just don't do it. Just don't do it. And I'm eternally grateful because now I feed that voice. And that is, you know, what my recovery feeds. But if it wasn't for that voice, and, you know, like I say, like many, like other, my dark and my rock bottom, which, you know, I don't think everyone has to hit a rock bottom, but I hit a very deep and terrible rock bottom. You know, that was that small little voice that still kept me going. And, you know, it's, and with the community, you know, like I said, you know, I'm not a bad person trying to be good. I'm a sick person trying to get well. And, you know, that's also, I think, the difference between guilt and shame. You know, shame is I am bad. Guilt is I did something bad. And, you know, forever, the weight loss industry, you know, the diet industry, all of those, they made me feel like I had failed, even with the injections, with the weight loss, like everything. And then I had never failed, honestly, at stuff. Like I considered myself to be very successful. And when I put my mind to it, I would achieve. So then I was like, why can't I get this? So then, you know, the shame was real and just the failure. And for me, the addiction loves that. It thrives off of that. And that is one thing that, you know, I am eternally grateful for, the community, and something also I have learned. Like I said, like, I'm not a bad person and it's not a moral issue. When I digest some things, it literally causes a psychoactive reaction in my brain. And there's also responsibility, though. I will say that, like, I do have responsibility, though, because, you know, like we say sometimes, and I agree with it, like, I have no control over the first bite. Like, once I have a bite of certain things, you know, one bite is too much, a roomful is not enough, but I do control that first bite. That I do have control over. Now, once I have that first bite, for me, it's like once I have that first drink, I do go into oblivion, but I have control over that. Like they say, we get over 60,000 thoughts in a day. And to me, I get thoughts. Sometimes I still get urges, but, you know, it's just the thought. What I am responsible then is for my second thought and my first action. That is my responsibility. And then that is something I do have control over and I do have an amount of willpower over.
I love that. Oh, just all of that was so good. I'm curious, like when you talk about, because people probably listening are relating so much again to all this, but when you have that urge, I think that's so true. Like that's where the choice comes. Like once you take that first bite, it's over. So now, you know, in this kind of 3 years-ish time, what do you do? Like, you know, for people listening that are, you know, maybe like, what do I do when I have that urge? Because I get that question a lot, even in like, you know, my group coaching. So what is your kind of process now when you do get that urge? How do you make, you know, that choice?
Right. So I have a couple of a lot of things, I think. And I think it might depend maybe the urge and in what setting I am. There are the typical ones, I guess I can say that, you know, sometimes like go for a walk or distract yourself and, you know, take a really cold shower or take a hot shower. So those physical things sometimes have helped me when the urge comes. But I will say other things that have really helped me is that if I'm able to, I will get on a meeting and connect with my peers and see, you know, what is there. And sometimes I try to look at really at the urge, like, have I been stressful? Am I sad? You know, am I happy? Like, am I really excited for something? And I feel I need to celebrate because food for me was always, you know, either celebration, like I ate for anything. It was celebration. It was to mourn something, you name it, I ate. So then I try to find, is there a reason why this urge is coming? And then for me, sometimes I also look at it as maybe you just want to eat too. Like you just have the urge to eat. And it's just the urge. Like it's just a craving that is coming. And it's like some, like a physical tendency you have that you don't need to feed. And one thing that has really helped me a lot though, is one exercise called like you play the tape. And I play the tape. Like I tell myself, and I guess for me, like, okay, what if I do go get this substance? I go get this urge, this treat, if I cave into it, let me play the tape and what will happen. And for me, I feel like if I ingest, like for instance, sugar, I know it will never be enough. So I play the tape and I remember my past behaviors. And like, you know, sometimes as an addict, like we can't think our way into new behavior. We have to act our way into new behavior. Like we have to do the action. Like I love how they say, you know, information does not equal transformation. It's implementation. And I had a lot of information. I had a lot of books, a lot of podcasts, but it wasn't until I implemented it and actually carried out action. So that's one of the things, like I will play the tape through because I know me as an addict, once I have that first bite and I literally run through it, I'm like, then I'll eat that. Then I'll go to that. Then I'll go to that. And sometimes just that healthy respect for the disease. Like I will say there's maybe a healthy fear as well, but like there's a healthy respect to it. Like sometimes I no longer fight with it. Like I don't fight with the addictions. I don't fight the urges. Like if they come, I say, okay, you're there. I suffer from addictions. You're never going anywhere. For me, I'm obsessive. I'm compulsive. And, you know, I also suffer from anxiety, which I find correlates to it. Also OCD. And it's never going to go anywhere. So I have to make peace with it. Like when it comes to visit, it just doesn't stay for long. Like, I'm like, okay, so you've came to visit. You will be addressed appropriately with a following tool. And then it will be your time, you know, to leave. But I'm like, you know what? We're not fighting anymore. I spent a whole lifetime fighting you, trying to hide you, trying to destroy you, realizing that you are a part of me, but that's all you are. You're a part of me, but you are not of me. You are not all there is to me. And that
such a good distinction to be able to make. Yeah, that's such an important distinction. And I like you said, a little bit of fear. I say that, like, don't get too cocky, Siobhan, here, you know, like, you still have to do all the things, because as soon as my daily tools start slipping, those urges go up, you know, and then, you know, then it's like, I do want to isolate, or I want to, it's like, I'm always have a very healthy respect for how this all works and how precious my recovery is and how I have to hold that, you know, pretty close to me. So I love all of this. So tell me, you know, in your, cause it sounds like weight loss was definitely a motivator for you. For me, that was, I wanted to lose weight, you know, but now that's one of, like, you know, just a side effect of all the other benefits. So just talk to us with the last few minutes that we have about some of the benefits, maybe even unexpected for you, but what it's been the best thing about, you know, finding this recovery for you? What's been, you know, your top benefits?
Okay. So some of my top benefits, and I guess, you know, I love what you said, and I couldn't agree more. Weight loss, I think, is one of the least important, yet, you know, for those that it is very important to, but it's one of the least important, I think, gifts I have received. I was able, you know, to get into a normal weight for me. But one of the best benefits, there's so many I can think of, but I think some of them that I really value and treasure is clear mind. I never realized how foggy I was and how, and, you know, and I still, like I said, I was functioning, but now I just realized how sharper I am, how my memory is better. And I don't sometimes like, but then I don't know, like sometimes even like my hearing has gotten much better. And that's why I tell people, I don't want to always, but that is one of the things. And then another thing that I think I value so much that I will say, like, the way I eat now, even if I didn't lose any weight, or even if I didn't, you know, if I were to put on weight, like, I would never want to eat that way again due to these gifts. Is one is I feel like my spirit is much calmer, as far as like I said, I'm a very anxious person. I honestly was a very angry person. I went to anger management. Even as a kid, I was on ADHD medication, but then I had gotten, you know, off of that. So even that, and I don't know, to be honest, that was something I never expected. And even now, those that know me, sometimes, like, I'll never forget, there was one time a situation that, like, something happened and then I handled it differently. And they said, "You're taking this very well." Like, they had not seen the old Jose that would go off the walls and just fight and cuss and just be terrible. And that is one of the greatest gifts, like the anxiety, the depression, the anger, and there's like other physical ones, like my sleep apnea got so much better. My acne, I have always suffered from cystic acne. I've even been on Accutane like 2 rounds, which is a very hard drug. But then I never realized the way of eating was really what was affecting me. And then sometimes I think at one point I realized, but I could never stay stopped. But those are some of the greatest gifts, is just the clear of mind and just, I feel calmer. Like I said, the anxiety, even the depression, and just this spirit is so different. And to be honest, when I embarked on this road to recovery, I never thought, I knew I had a problem with food, and that's why, but I never thought these were going to be the gifts. And there's something we say in our fellowship, and they say, you know, you'll be able to achieve stuff beyond your wildest dreams. And I remember when I would first hear that, I'm like, this is a joke. Like, yeah, right. But, you know, I was desperate and I wanted something, but now I can't wait to see what life holds for me, because I literally have achieved stuff beyond my wildest dreams. I had goals and objectives that I always knew I wanted to achieve, and now I have achieved. And like I said, I now I have other new ones. And part of that, I can always thank to recovery. That's why, to me, to each their own as well, but to me, my recovery and my abstinence is everything. And I love what you said. And I protect it with my life. I cherish it because it's something so precious. And I feel like without it, I am not the best being I can be. And I sometimes do stuff that for others, they might seem selfish. They might seem like very self-absorbed. And I'm like, no, I have to do it for me. And in order to be the best me to help you, I need to do it. And I think we hear that a lot, but sometimes I didn't practice it. And now when I truly practice it, I just really value it so much more. And I realize I am a better me. And because I am a better me, I can help you be a better you.
Such a perfect ending to this. Thank you, Jose. That's just so beautifully said. I do, though, you know, I wish we weren't out of time because we could just keep talking forever. But I just wanted to leave always at the end here, just that room for, is there anything, I think we covered so many different things, but is there anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't cover, or just any last words of advice or wisdom, you know, for people listening today?
So one thing I would like to finish out with that helped me, and it was one of the hardest things I, you know, had to overcome is, like I said, I suffer from addictions. And I have many addictions. And, you know, like I said, it's one disease, many outlets. But I realize that is just a part of me, but it's not of me. I am Jose. And to me, I was forged, you know, by the universe, by a greater, higher power that was amazing, that made the moons, the sun, it made the mountains, and all this beautiful nature we see. And for me, when I realized, you know, I suffered from eating disorders, from addictions, I felt, you know, like I was not worthy and that I had been written off. And what I can say is I was not, and I do not need anyone's validation. The day the universe created me and it created you was the only validation you ever needed to know that you deserve to exist in this world. And like I said, once I realized that, I'm like, yes, I suffer from addictions, but every part of me is beautiful and I am enough. And I was always enough in the past, even though I thought I wasn't. And I will always be enough in the future. So to all those out there and to whoever needs to hear it, you are enough. And like I said, you don't need anyone's validation. The day the universe created you was the only validation you needed to know that you were worthy of existence on this earth.
Thank you. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. Really, really love talking with you.
Thank you, Siobhan. And thank you so much for having me. It has been an honor and such a privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.